Don't complain about cold. Alright, hopefully this thing's working. So the Gemara starts with a statement. It says, right, humbly walks the dust, its eyes are pointed up to heaven. So whenever Chazal come across statements like this, they were not trying to be silly. They were not trying to tell you weird things. And even you'll see some Gemaras, they talk about things that don't seemingly exist. Right, you have Gemaras in Baba Basra that talk about frogs that sit on cities. Really? Right, fish that get washed up onto a land and crush cities, and they build from those cities bones. We'll talk about most of these Gemaras throughout the year. They talk about even a animal that defecated in a river and stopped up a river. Right, all sorts of very interesting things. Now, seemingly, when you read these, they don't teach you this stuff in Gemara class in high school. Right,
teach me this stuff anywhere.
What?
Never heard that in my life.
Well, went to Augustine this year. Anyways, so the whole point is that Chazal obviously did not just feel a necessity to write silliness, or those rabbis when they're learning Gemara in the Beis Medrash, all of a sudden you spend enough time in the Beis Medrash, you feel like your eyes start spinning and you start seeing stuff. So that's not what happened either, nor they weren't sniffing whiteout. But Chazal basically decided that they had to transmit certain secrets or certain codes to human existence and human life vis-a-vis metaphors. Meaning that, do you guys know the procession of how oral Torah was written down? No. Thank God for ignorance. Right? An American, you guys spent thousands of dollars for your high school educations and it's obviously gone
to enough
somewhere. At least they taught you English, hopefully, right?
Everybody got me now. Principal's pockets, that's where it is.
What?
Yes.
Principal's pockets. But prisoners will make a lot of money in America?
No.
I don't know. Anyway.
Colossal.
Basically, so now we'll get to a little bit of Jewish History 101. Okay? The Oral Torah, okay, which constitutes everything out of the five books of Moses and Tanakh. Okay? Right, there's five books of Moses, which is the Torah, then you have the Nevi'im, which is, right, a certain amount of Sfarim, then you have Ksuvim, and then you have everything after that, which includes everything from Mishnah to Gemara, Tosefta, Shmaitza, Braisa, Medrash, everything from there on, that's all called Torah Shebaal Peh. Now the Torah Shebaal Peh was given to Moshe at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai was given every single thing that every rabbi was ever going to tell any single student. That's another Gemara that we will deal with to explain exactly what went on then.
How can you do that much in that amount of time?
He had a lot of Mountain Dew.
Ha ha ha.
Anyways, how? Because Moshe Rabbeinu left his body down. You know, you ever hear? Okay, these are all things that we will get to. Well, we'll try to get to as many of them as we can.
He left his body down.
He left his body down. You ever hear that when Klal Yisrael, how did Klal Yisrael ever build the Egel Azov? Is because that when they, right, on the 40th day when Moshe had come down, had said that he would come down, so they all looked at their watches and said, like, Moshe's not here yet. Now, they counted from one day earlier than Moshe had been to count. Because he meant, start counting from the next day, they thought they could count from the day that Moshe was talking on. Okay? So, they looked at their watches and they're like, hey, Moshe's not around. What's going on over here? It says they looked up in Shemayim, and the Malach HaMoves, right, who is the quintessential multitasker in Shemayim, he's the Yetzer Hara, the Malach HaMoves, right, and he's the prosecutor upstairs in Shemayim after you die. This guy, he can't get enough. He can't get number one job. Okay, it actually says that he's the one that gets you to sin. He's the one that prosecutes against you in the heaven. And he's the one that carries it out when God actually sends the edict out to kill you. So the Malach HaMoves decided to try to test Klal Yisrael's faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Malach HaMoves showed Klal Yisrael a vision, and he showed Klal Yisrael a vision of the Malachi Asharis carrying the body of Moshe Rabbeinu, and Klal Yisrael had interpreted that as, hey, Moshe's dead.
Wait, who was carrying the body?
The Malachi Asharis, the angels in heaven.
So then, yeah, what were they supposed to think?
Because what actually happened is that Moshe Rabbeinu transcended all the levels in heaven. At a certain level, Moshe's physical body could not go any further. And therefore, he had to kind of leave his shoes at the door.
Shoes is the body.
Oh,
exactly. The guf, the physical body, is called the shoes of the neshama. And so he had to leave his shoes at the door. In order for himself to transcend even further, so he had to leave his body kind of there. And therefore, that's what the Malach HaMoves showed. Now, Klal Yisrael interpreted that as Moshe's dead. And therefore, we need to do something about it. So we can no longer survive as, now we can maybe talk about a different time, exactly what Klai Yisrael was doing when they sinned with the golden calf, because it wasn't just, right? Aleichem Shalom. Okay? It wasn't just that they decided to, okay, worship a golden calf, because guess what? The golden calf walked, it talked, it did all sorts of things. It wasn't just like this stationary, like, I don't know, we all watched on, at least from New York, Channel 11, the Ten Commandments, right? We see this like golden calf and everybody bowing down to it. And we think that that's what Klal Yisrael did. But, I mean, you're talking about people that just spoke to God. They can't be that stupid, right? God also said in those Ten Commandments, which he had just told them, right? Don't make any brazen images. What's a brazen image? I don't know, but whatever. Don't make any brazen images out of gold or silver. So, I mean, how'd you blow that one? You heard it directly from God. Wasn't they heard it from somebody else? But the whole point is, the Egel Azov wasn't just an idol to worship. The Egel Azov was actually an intermediary. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu was the intermediary between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. So too, Klal Yisrael did not feel that they could be at the level of being directly connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times. Because what happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu had been directly connected to them? They had gotten, the first Aseret HaDibros died, had to be resurrected. They got told the second of the Aseret HaDibros died again. This is a pretty trippy thing, getting died and resurrected and died and resurrected. And he said, wasn't pleasant, I guess. So they said, we can't handle that. So we need an intermediary. But Moshe's dead, what are we going to do? So you know what, let's build an intermediary. And that's what they did. Okay, the Gemara talks about all these different things that happen. And they talk about it in Chazal, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was upstairs in Shemayim, so he was not a physical body. That's why he was able to accept all the Torah. Everything. Right? From the five books of Moses all the way down to what I'm telling you guys now. He accepted all of it. How it then transcended throughout the generations was a very interesting thing. The five books of Moses, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim were all written down. Every single Sefer, right? The five books of Moses, Moshe wrote down. Each Navi then wrote their Sefer. Right? Yirmiyahu Navi also wrote Medrash Eicha. Right? But each Sefer that's in Tanakh had to be written, which is what's called Ruach HaKodesh. Who knows what the last Sefer in Tanakh that was written with the Ruach HaKodesh is? There goes again your high school educations. No Navi, what? Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther, right? Which happened roughly? You guys know a timeline about when Megillas Esther happened? In respect to Jewish history. In between the destruction
of
the first and second base of Megiddush, okay? So that's when Torah Shebiksav was finally finished off and codified 100%, was after Megillas Esther was written, which happened roughly just before the building of the second base of Megiddush, because the second base of Megiddush was built by Ezra Hanavi, who was given permission by Esther's son Darius. Right, Esther had a son from Achashverosh, his name was Darius. He gave Ezra the permission to go back out of Persia and to build the second base of Megiddush, okay? Just a little bit of history so that you guys get an idea of where we're coming from. Now, oral Torah, however, was actually forbidden to be written down. It's forbidden to be written down. Now, therefore, when it came time during the times of the second, just after the destruction of the second base of Megiddush, and the destruction of the second base of Megiddush was obviously a very tragic event. It was actually something that put a tremendous blow to Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who lived about four generations after the destruction of the second base of Megiddush, right, it says, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi became so great because he saw the end of the life of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was a student of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva was the one who transcended between the destruction of the second base of Megiddush and afterwards. Rabbi Kiva died about 70 years after the destruction of the second base of Megiddush. He lived for about 120 years, 50 years before the destruction of the second base of Megiddush, 70 years after. Okay? He died just after the revolt of Bar Kokhba. Now, so Rav Meir, who was his student, and then, right, Yehuda HaNasi was able to see the end of the life of Rav Meir, and he lived about two generations after that. Okay? Now, Yehuda HaNasi saw something very interesting. In Klal Yisrael, because of the, right, Yehuda HaNasi also lived, right, at the beginning of certain edicts that the Romans were placing incredible, incredible pains on Klal Yisrael and forbidding them from learning Torah, and he saw that Klal Yisrael was forgetting Torah. They were forgetting Torah, and the transmission of the oral Torah was starting to be forgotten. There were less and less people that understood it. So, Yehuda HaNasi darshened the pasuk that says, "Eis lasus l'Hashem efiru Torah sechav." That it is a time for God, so we must even make free God's Torah. What does that mean? So he basically took that pasuk and he darshened it out, and he said that I can now write down oral Torah, which had been forbidden up until then. And he wrote down the Mishnah. He compiled and wrote the Mishnah. Yehuda HaNasi. Few generations later, Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who were the last of the Tanoim, the first of the Moroim, they were that bridge, so they wrote down the Gemara. No. So that was all the halachic-based things, right? All the things that you guys learn about, right? All those interesting topics in Sota and all the things that you guys complained about in high school, saying, why do I need to know about one ox goring another ox? Right? What the heck does goring mean anyways?
So,
right?
No,
of course.
Hitting out,
killing
it.
With a horse. Yeah, that's a good one. This guy took English in high school.
That's
right. Where his education went.
That's
yeah?
Exactly where it went.
What do you want, Dana? Anything? You raised your hand?
We know.
You guys, by the way, you don't need to raise your hands. Okay? Okay. Now, the Chazal did this for the halachic part of Torah. Now, there's a slight problem. Because when it came down to the more mystical parts of the Torah, where it came down with the parts that they talk about, A, interpersonal relationships, or how a human being should act vis-a-vis his world, or darshaning out or making drushes out of certain psukim, which are more cryptic and deep psukim, or even talking about how God deals with the world. So those are things that you don't necessarily want to make free for every single person to know, because then every single person can then look at them and corrupt them in whichever way they want. So therefore, Chazal went and they came up with an ingenious way of actually codifying it so that it shouldn't be forgotten. And they did it vis-a-vis Agarata. Agarata is roughly, basically, either stories or metaphors that Chazal wrote down in the Gemara to portray a certain message. And that way, somebody who has the keys to unlock the code to the Agarata can understand and derive from it what he's supposed to get out of it. However, somebody who doesn't have those keys will think that it's just nonsense. Right? Some rabbi sitting on a ship eating some magic mushrooms and experiencing whatever he experiences. So that's where we come to give you guys a little bit of an appreciation of Agarata. Because the more and more that you learn Agarata, the more and more that you see the depth within it, is the more and more that you come to understand the beauty of it. The Chazal tell us that if a person wants to light his spiritual fire, he should learn Agarata. Because Agarata is something that inherently pulls a person's heart. Something that a person finds tremendous stuff in it. He finds tremendous, tremendous intelligence and knowledge in it. And that's why I named this class by that statement, right? Again, we'll start again. Shvil, the ozo bar avzo, lowly and humbly walks the duck. Ve'enam matifi, but his eyes are pointed upwards. The Vilna Gaon explains that this verse, which is a Gemara in Bava Kama, is talking about the words of the Chachamim. That even though the words of the Chachamim seem very trivial and very lowly, however, the eyes are always pointed upwards. Their eyes are always pointed towards heaven, that they're very, very lofty intentions with what to teach you. So, as we'll see, that there are basically, roughly, two types of Agarata that we'll deal with. First of all, there's the Agarata that are written in true metaphor, that the Gemara just gives examples of things, and we're going to have to try to figure out and piece together exactly what Chazal were trying to tell us from this. And then there are the different Gemaras that talk about different very interesting psukim. Right? Mostly, I don't know, how many of you guys are in the Keys to Tanakh class? Or anybody taking Tanakh? Okay. Well, if you ever read through Tanakh, especially if you read through the Ladder of Nevi'im, like Yishayahu, and Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel, so there are a lot of psukim that don't make that much sense. And the Gemara gives very interesting interpretations to them. We have to come to try to understand them. Okay. So, the first Gemara... What?
I'm going to grab a tissue.
Okay, whatever you want. You're 18 years old. You can do whatever you want. So, you guys ready? Let's get started a little bit. It's okay. Still, I can do whatever you want. Very interesting Gemara. Okay? I figured since we start we're a few days, weeks, a week and then a little bit before Rosh Hashanah, we might as well start with a Gemara about Rosh Hashanah, right? Talks about Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Talks about Gzar Din. Talks about the judgment of a human being. Now, we all know that Rosh Hashanah is a big scary day, right? They tell us, you know, Rosh Hashanah is a big scary day. You know, I mean, at least in grade school they tell you, you know, besides for, you know, the song Dip the Apple in the Honey, which everybody, you know, yeah. You're not Jewish if you can't sing that song, right? However, you know, everybody always tells you, you know, even my 4-year-old tells me, how about there are 3 books open, right? There's the Lavon, there's the White, there's the Black, and there's the Benin. This guy's in the middle, right? If you're like, eh. Right, there's that big scale that God takes out, and he weighs everything out, right? Time and time again. Okay? Now, very interesting Gemara. Okay, Remeir Oimer. Now we know that everything on Rosh Hashanah is judged. Everything. From all your health, your wealth, right? Everything that you're going to do and you're going to get out of the year is going to be judged on Rosh Hashanah. Right? All the money that you make, very scary thought, right? You know, on Rosh Hashanah. What? Why don't you come move over here?
Yeah,
it's probably better. I actually do very muscle mind because I'm a very hot person.
You can
so
sit right here.
Okay, next time. But you can come sit here. Anyways, so a very interesting story, just so that you guys should know, that I once heard that there used to be, there's a city in Yerushalayim, it's sitting in Eretz Yisrael called Bnei Brak. You guys ever heard of Bnei Brak?
Yeah.
It's like a suburb of Tel Aviv. Very religious city. And there used to be one printing press in old Bnei Brak. One printing press in old Bnei Brak. And the owner of the printing press, you know, made good money, because, you know, Bnei Brak, they're religious people, they like to buy Sfarim, so, you know. Obviously, there's business. But what happens, you know, as cities expand? So another printing press opened up, and of course, you know, there's a little bit of animosity between the two printing presses. You know, he's stealing my business, maybe he's stealing my business, this, that, whatever it is. So it was a family-owned business, the first printing press. So the sons of the owner once walked in, and they saw their father sitting down, having tea with the other owner of the new printing press. And of course, the sons look at their father and like, what's going on over here? You're going a little crazy. What's our father doing? You know, this guy's the competition. And so, you know, they're sitting, they're having tea, and they hear their father having a conversation with the guy, you know, like, oh, how's business going? Things are, you know, so the guy's like, no, well, I don't know, sometimes the ink smudges this way, and I don't know, and the father's like, oh, if you mix the ink with a little bit of this, you know, compound, it'll make things better. So the sons are going a little bit crazy, like, what's dad doing? He's lost his marbles, I don't know what the guy slipped in his tea. Right? He's telling him all the secrets of the trade. You know, and then the father goes on, he goes, you know, by the way, how's business going? And the guy's like, I don't know, so many customers. So the father gets up, he goes, you know, here, let me take out my Rolodex for you. He takes out his Rolodex, he goes, oh yeah, call this guy, he always has business to, you know, swarm to print, and oh, maybe call this guy. Now the sons are really going out of their kishkas. They're like, their heads are about to explode. They're like, not only did this guy have the audacity to come sit down and have tea with our father, not only did our father then tell him the trade secrets, but now our father's actually giving him our customers. What's going on? So, you know, but I mean, it's their father. They can't do anything. Finally, the guy leaves, and the sons come barging up to their father. They're like, Dad, have you lost your mind? What's going on? So the father says, what type of kids did I raise? He says, every single year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides for me how much money I'm going to make that year. No matter how much I work, no matter how little I work, I'm going to make that same amount of money. So if I have to work a little bit less that year, this year to make that much money, is there a problem with that? On Rosh Hashanah, we get judged for everything. Yeah, we think, what do you mean? If I put in extra overtime, I get more money. Yeah, you do, but then your car might break down and you have to buy a new one. So in the end of the day, you make the same amount of money. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has nice, you know, he understands how to work things out. He understands how to piece things together and the big picture. So you were judged on Rosh Hashanah exactly how much money you're going to make that year. And no matter how much you work, and I'm going to say work, he's going to change that. Now, so the Gemara now talks about Gzar Din. Right? Very interesting Gemara. Remeir says, Shnayim sha'olu l'mita. Two guys, they get into their deathbed. Okay? V'chol yin shava. Their sickness is the same. Both diagnosed with the same type of cancer. Sickness is the same. Two guys go to the hangman's noose. You guys know what hangman's noose is, right? In the old days, you guys seen movies, right? You know, the guy comes up, walks him over, the guy with the black mask, puts it on, slips the noose over your head, and he laughs a little bit, and like, pulls the door, and, right?
Yeah.
You guys probably all watched it on YouTube, watching Saddam Hussein get killed or something like that.
I
don't watch
it. That was terrible.
I watched it.
It's like the guys getting their heads sawed off by Arab terrorists. I mean, like, people, I can't believe that people watch that stuff.
Yeah,
I did not watch that.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
I did not watch that. I can't believe people watch that. I can't believe someone recorded that.
Yeah, who takes videos of that?
The Arabs. It's
disgusting.
Because it made it the background of his phone. Every time you open it, it starts playing.
What?
Video.
Of Saddam Hussein getting hanged?
That's disgusting.
Oh, right.
That's disgusting.
That's intense.
Yeah.
At all, that's disgusting. I mean, wrong, like, got a sick sense of humor.
You know, even you have to understand the appreciation that Klal Yisrael has, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for humanity, is that even a criminal who gets stoned, now according to the Man de Omer and the Gemara that we actually paskin like, stoning is the worst death possible. It's given for the worst crimes the person could do in Judaism. So that's the machlok is between Bishmal and the Rabbanon, which is more intense, the hot lead down your throat or stoning. And we paskin like the Rabbanon that say that skila is worse.
Oh.
Skila is worse.
Hot lead, I feel like, is so much more torture.
Well, the hot lead
down your throat, that's pretty
down
bad.
Your throat, but they, you know, the skila, they throw you off a building, then they throw a big rock on you, then they cut you a little rock.
Lead burning your
it's not a big building.
They throw
it's,
you
it's,
off
it's,
a building,
it's,
you die on impact.
No,
and
no,
you
it's
don't
not
die.
A building.
They do it to
it's,
you don't
it's
die.
A platform
so
that is two
die.
Human heights high. So let's say 12 feet up in the air.
Okay, fine.
That's not all that high. Okay, and they roll a big stone on you, and then they throw little rocks on you. Okay?
I really get the hot. I really get the stone than the.
I mean, I don't want to get either. I mean,
yeah,
I say, no offense. Neither one sounds all that much. All that. Neither one sounds all
the
that pleasant.
Big rock, the big rock crushes you in 1 second.
As I said, I don't know how many of you guys were in the chumash that I just gave before, but my friends, I remember my fifth year in yeshiva, my fourth year in yeshiva, so my friends got in a cab on Erev Rosh Hashanah. I remember I was in my dorm room. These three guys came in. They said, "You know, my name is Daniel." So they said, "Daniel, do you want to come with us to the Kotel on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Davin?" I said, "No. I'm like really tired. You know, Slichus the night before Rosh Hashanah. I said, you know, I just want to rest before Rosh Hashanah. I want to go to sleep. Get my strength." And that was the longest cab ride these guys ever took. Basically, their cab driver decided that he wanted to take a shortcut through Wadi Jo's. Wadi Jo's is an Arab neighborhood right next to the Kotel, the old city. And basically, Arabs surrounded this cab and they took huge cinder blocks. And they broke through the windows of the cab. They took each one of these guys out and they beat them within an inch of their lives. This was the incident that started the Second Intifada. So three friends of mine. And one of these guys was stabbed. Each one, they were separated from each other. Each one got away. I'm telling you, it was a nace nigla. It was a tremendous, tremendous nace how each one of them got away. Right? But I guarantee you that on Rosh Hashanah Day, when they said Umiba Skila, everybody else understood what that meant now. Most of us have never seen someone get stoned to death. But every single person, when the Baal Tefillah said Umi Baskila that year, every single person in that room, and I'm talking about over 250 guys, started crying. Because all you had to do was look over to the side and see your friends bandaged up with their heads, right, looking like it came out of a MASH unit. Right? All of a sudden you start bawling. Because now it means a lot more to you. Right? So none of these things are pleasant. Chazal, we paskin that Skila is the worst. Right? Person who's over to Vodazar gets Skila. Person who's Michal Shabbos gets Skila. Now you want to know why the two of those are comparable. We can talk about that at a different time. That's the worst. Right? So Shnayim Sha'ol Legardim. Oh, so what was I saying? Right? I was saying why. How Klai Yisrael values humanity. So, person who gets Skila, the halacha is that after the person gets Skila, you have to take the body and you have to hang it on a tree. Okay? So that every person who walks by understands, right, and takes a message from it. But the Gemara says that the halacha is that you cannot leave that body on that tree once nightfall hits. I mean, you have to take it down right away. Why? Because it says that's the covet of a human being. That even someone who's we look at as being that decrepit, that they did all those averas, that they were deserving of skila, in the end of the day, there's something to the humanity that you can't see a human body hanging on a tree. Anyways, so people go to the hangman's noose. Two guys go to the hangman's noose. Lidoin! Right, in the olden days, they actually used to judge you when your neck was in the noose. You know, the judge says guilty, you're like, woof, right there. So, the dinaim shava, and they're both, it's the same crime. They're both responsible for the same crime. They both perpetrated the same crime. Ze yard of ze lo yard. This guy gets out of the bed, and the other guy, who has the same sickness, doesn't get out of his bed. He stays in that bed forever. Zen nitsa v'zel le nitsa. This guy gets saved from the hangman's noose, he's acquitted. The other guy doesn't, but they did the same crime. Mipnei ma zeh yard v'zel lo yard zeh nitsa v'zel lo nitsa. What does that happen? This guy gets saved, this guy doesn't get saved. Now listen to what Gemara says. What would you think up until this point? Why would one get saved and one not get saved?
One is more tefillos from other mitzvot, something like that. I don't know.
What would you think? What do you think? Well, the Gemara says, maybe you would think the guy davened, right? Right? Now listen to what the Gemara says next. Zehispalel v'nana. This guy davened and was answered. Zehispalel v'loinana. This guy, he didn't not daven. I mean, you gotta be an idiot, right? When the hangman's putting that noose around your neck, not gonna pray to God, right? And this guy davened, he wasn't answered. Umar says, why was one answered and one wasn't answered?
It's all God's choice.
That's true. But again, we're here to understand, right? Again, as I said before, most of the Gadat Gemara is supposed to teach us in either something about us, something about the way that God interacts with us. Right? One of those two things. That's it. So the Gemara answers. Now this answer should be, is more confusing than anything else. Ze hispalo tefila shlema nene. The person who davened a complete tefila was answered with, this is the meaning, got through the whole Shmona Esrei. Ze lo yispalo tefila shlema v'lo nene. This guy didn't daven a complete tefila and it wasn't answered. Okay, that's the Gemara. What do you think that Gemara means? Now, I'll give you guys a little bit of a hint. Okay? Because, you know, what's our general practice in life whenever we see a Gemara that we don't understand? Who do we look at first?
The Rabbi.
The Rabbi. No. Rashi. All right, Rabban Shel Yisrael. That's what Rashi, that's one of the people say that Rashi stands for, even though it stands for Shlomi Yitzchaki, right? But again, I'm going to hopefully teach you a little bit of a derech, right? You know, the Rebbe in the morning are teaching you a derech of how to look through a piece of Gemara in Ian, so I'm going to hopefully try to teach you a little bit of a way to get through, right, a derech and a gadat also. And the first person we always look at is Rashi, okay? But here Rashi kind of doesn't help us a little bit. Why? Because what does Rashi say? Rashi says, Tefila Shlema, Niskaven. He had Kavana.
Great answer, Rashi.
What?
Great answer, Rashi.
Great answer, Rashi. Now, what's the problem with this?
Of course the guy had Kavana, even if he didn't have a Tefila Shlema, he was about to die.
Exactly! What idiot on the face of this planet, when the hangman's like sitting there sharpening, you got this big, you know, they always got these hangmans, like big, burly, fat guys, big hair on their chest, black mask, sitting there sharpening the axe. Right? And you're like sitting there thinking about the Knicks game as you're diving, like, please God, save me. Like, oh my God, what did LeBron James do today? I mean, come on! Right? Your life is on the line. You can't get more intense than that, right? You're on your deathbed, right? You're sick. Doctors are like, oh no, no hope for you. Sorry. Right? You know, like, maybe you want to sign this, you know? All your, you know, all your stuff. You're not going to dive with Kavana? You're not going to dive with Kavana? That doesn't make any sense. So my Rebbe explained something to me once, unbelievably, on this Gemara. He says, what does Gemara mean about Kavana over here? He said it b'shem Reb Nosson Wachvogel. Nosson Wachvogel, okay, we'll give you guys a little bit of education. Reb Nosson Wachvogel was the previous Mashkiach of Lakewood Yeshiva. He says, what does it mean by Kavana over here? Over here it doesn't mean Kavana like Kavana that in the words of the Tefillah, because as we said, it doesn't make any sense that any Jew or any person on the face of this planet, right, would have the hangman sharpening his axe or be on his deathbed and not daven with Kavana. You wouldn't be thinking about anything else. But what does he mean by Kavana over here?
One person believes that God will actually save me, and the person thinks that I'm just praying just for the sake of praying.
Oh, that's an amazing answer. What's your name again?
Ami
says a number of things. What does it mean by Kavana over here? One means that he actually has Kavana, that his tefillahs can help. Because some people, they give up on their situation in life. They get to a situation in life, things are just going bad, and they just assume things have to stay that way. And they pray because, you know, that's what we're taught as Jews that we need to be doing. And it's a big schus. By the way, you should just realize that you don't even know how big of a schus it is. So you're given the chance to daven before you die. Now, I once, when my grandmother, Alel Shalom, was passing away, I guess not right now, it was 4 years ago. So, I was able to be by her side when she was Nifteris, and I was,
sounds freaky.
I mean, I wasn't there actually when she died, actually, I wasn't. Oh. But, I was there the days just before, and I remember looking through, there's a lot of, you know, you don't really look about this at this forum about death and the halachas of after death, and Avelis really till you're actually dealing with it at that point. And I figured that, you know, my father's going to turn to me with all these halachic questions, I better get a crash course in Hilchos Avelis. I started looking through all the svarim on it, and I looked through that, you know, what we call Vidui HaGadol. Vidui HaGadol is basically, you know, on Yom Kippur we go through Vidui, we confess, but before a person dies he has to go through what's called Vidui HaGadol, which is the long Vidui. Okay, and long, I mean, like, it's about 4 or 5 pages long, And I was looking through this thing and I was like, wow, who has their wits about them that can get through this before they die? I mean, that's like, it's like 5 pages long. And I came to me, it came to a real comprehension that it's a big source to be able to do that. Because not everybody can. They told me about Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum was the Rosh Hashiva of Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn. That his son, the day before he died, his father called him over and he was in excruciating pain. He died of, I think, of some type of back cancer or something like that. He said, it's time to say Vidui. And the two of them together, father and son, said Vidui Agadol, and they died. And it's an incredible thing. You know, most of us don't even comprehend, like, you know, if we would have our wits then before we die. But most of us, yeah, we pray because that's what's been ingrained into us. You pray, you daven for right. You say Shema Yisrael, and every story ends up a jump Jew. Says Shema Yisrael, and then he dies. Okay? But how many of us actually believe that that tefillah would actually help ourselves? How many people actually believe that that tefillah has the possibility to help? This very, very interesting story. It's brought down in Perek Ches of Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer. Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer is one of the first midrashim ever written. It was written between, basically, a Tana who used to learn with Eliyahu HaNavi every single day. That's why it's called Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer. Right? Because, I'm sorry, not Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer, excuse me, Tana D'Rabbi Eliyahu, excuse me, my mistake, quoted the wrong. So, Tana D'Rabbi Eliyahu, right, was basically what, right, this Tana learned with Eliyahu HaNavi every single day. Now, in Perek Ches, this is an unbelievable story. It says a story about Chizkiyahu HaMelech. You guys know who Chizkiyahu HaMelech was? Who was Chizkiyahu HaMelech?
He was the king who, his father was.
Wasn't he the evil king?
It was Achav, no? But anyway, he led the biggest Baal Teshuva movement in the history of Klai Yisrael. He was like, what, 8 years? No, 20.
No, that's Yoshio you're thinking of. Thinking of Yoshio. But the two of them are very similar. But Chizkiyahu HaMelech was a tremendous tzaddik. It says that Chizkiyahu HaMelech, says the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that he could have been Mashiach. Kodesh Baruch Hu Rotsa, Kodesh Baruch Hu Lasa, Chizkiyahu HaMelech Mashiach. Am I over time? Okay. Chizkiyahu HaMelech Mashiach, and he wanted to make Sancheriv, right? Sancheriv, who was the Assyrian king who came to battle him, Gog u'Magog. What was the problem? That after HaKadosh Baruch Hu killed out, you want to know what happened? You guys know what happened with Sancheriv? Sancheriv amassed an army of over 250 million soldiers. And he marched on Jerusalem. He was the one that sent the Aseres HaShvatim into Golis. Right, he marched down from the north of Israel. He sent all the 10 tribes of Israel into Golis, to where we don't know it nowadays. And then he besieged Jerusalem with 250 million soldiers.
Gemara says. He's such a big tzaddik, why would he do that?
No. Sancheriv was the evil king.
Oh, I thought
he was.
Okay, yeah.
He went to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, was the king of Yehuda at the time. And Sancheriv was there to wipe out Yerushalayim and the Jewish people forever. So Sancheriv amassed his army around Yerushalayim and he vowed that there was nothing that they could do to save Yerushalayim. Chizkiyahu HaMelech davened HaKadosh Baruch Hu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save him. That night a malach came down from Shemayim and killed out all 250 million soldiers of Sancheriv. The Gemara goes to different opinions of how the Malach killed all of them. Either he opened up their eyes and they saw the Chayas HaKodesh and Shemayim, they all dropped dead, or different things that could have happened to them, except for 5 individuals. Sancheriv, his 2 sons, Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan, were his 2 generals. Those 5 people awoke in the morning. Okay guys, let's get ready to go.
Anybody?
Right? They were all dead. One of the biggest miracles that happened in Klai Yisrael's history. So it says that Chizkiyahu HaMelech at that point could have become Mashiach. However, he did not sing Shira Takar. Excuse me. He did not sing Shira Takarish Baruch Hu. Right?
The
so,
way to lose it all.
Exactly. Yeah. But Chizkiyahu HaMelech obviously was a pretty big tzaddik. Not only that, is that Chizkiyahu HaMelech took a sword. You guys think the Rav Isaacson is tough. And he placed it in front of every single base medrash and he says, Kol Shaloi Asak Bezeh, Yidoka Bezeh. Whoever does not learn this is going to get impaled on this. You have a tough Rosh Yeshiva. And they were baidek, they checked in all of Eretz Yisrael, and there was not a tinoik, not a child, that did not know all the halachas of Tumah and Tara verbatim. So obviously it was a pretty intense generation. What happens? Chizkiyahu HaMelech gets deathly ill. He actually goes down to his deathbed. Yishayahu HaNavi comes in, and he says, guess what? You're going to die. Not only that, but guess what? You don't have a portion in the world to come. That stinks. Right? Can you imagine this? Chizkiyahu HaMelech is a huge tzaddik. Right? Can you imagine the Navi comes in and tells him, oh, hey, guess what, guys? You lost everything. Right? Sorry. Chizkiyahu HaMelech says, why? What'd I do? I was marbid's Torah. I brought this Torah into the world. What'd I do wrong? So he says, you didn't do the mitzvah approval. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech jumps up and goes, I got a very darn good reason why I didn't do approval. What's that reason? Is I'm going to have a kid named Menashe. You guys know who Menashe was? Menashe is one of the people in the Gemara that it actually does say in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that he's one of the four kings that does not have a chelek in the world to come. He erected a idol in the base of Megiddo and caused all of Klal Yisrael to worship idols. He burnt all the Sefer Torah in Klal Yisrael. He actually even killed his uncle, who was Yishayahu HaNavi. Chopped him up with an axe. He was not a very upstanding citizen. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech said, I saw that I'm going to have a rasha of a son named Menashe. So that's why I didn't have children. So Yishayahu HaNavi says to him, he says, that's not your business, it's God's business. You do what you're supposed to do in the world, and let's leave up to HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. So he didn't have a kid.
He had not had a child at that moment.
So right before he died, he had a child. Or he
Wait, one second. We'll see what happens
so
in a
second.
Because
he didn't want to have a kid, he...
Again, tzaddikim are judged, right, on a much higher level, right?
Yeah.
Tzaddikim are judged, right? We say kechut ha'sara, which means by a hair's breadth, right? Basically, it's always the same thing. Right? First of all, you guys even should know it just from your own simple lives, right? When LeBron James blows a big game, everybody talks about it. When Rabbi Steinrich blows a big game, nobody does, right? Because people that have a tremendous amount more talent, you judge them on a much higher level, and you expect more out of them. Right?
I mean, just get a move. It's like, I'm so much worse than him, and I'll even get
exactly, but you're not held accountable for that.
Too bad LeBron's not talented.
Alright? Okay, this is the Kobe LeBron argument.
Yeah,
okay.
Stupid.
Okay, exactly. Right? They're both overpaid people in this world.
Definitely.
Anyways.
Kobe's better.
Anyways!
Yes!
Okay. So what happens then? So, guess what? Chizkiyahu HaMelech has a great idea. He says, okay, Yishayahu HaNavi, you tell me I'm dying because I didn't have any children. Guess what? You give me your daughter to marry, and maybe through your schosim and my schosim, we'll have a good child. Listen to what happens next. Yishayahu says, yo man, it's too late. Right? I got the decree on your life. It says signed and sealed. You're dying. Nothing to do. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech looks at Yishayahu HaNavi and he says, shut up. Literally, shtok. Shtok means shut up. Kach mikublan mi base avi abba. This is what I had been passed down from me, from my grandfather David HaMelech to his son, all the way down to me. Afilu cherev shlufa al tzavaroi. Even if there's a drawn sword on your neck, al tisyoish min aracham. Don't give up davening, because your tefillahs can help at any point. It says Chizkiyahu HaMelech got up, he faced the wall. And he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he got better. Afilu cherev shlufa al tzavaro al tishayich min arachim. Life is always changeable, guys. Life can change at any moment. As I tell my students this all the time. The only thing that's guaranteed is death. Once you're dead, well, can't help you there. Life is always changeable, no matter how bad things get. Things can always turn around in a second. All you have to do is ask and believe that actually they can be answered. It doesn't mean that you have to say that my tefillahs are 100% going to be answered. But it means that they could. And if a person, that's exactly what the Gemara is trying to tell us. It's trying to tell us an intense thing, right? Doesn't make a difference what you are in life. Doesn't make a difference what you've been through in life. Doesn't make a difference. Things can change in a moment. All you have to do is ask. Because Baruch Hu's got the biggest bank account in the world. And it never, right? It never stops. You can ask him for anything. And he can give anything. But if you don't ask him, if you don't believe that you actually could get answered, so there's no chance. That's what this Gemara is trying to teach us. Gemara is trying to teach us about what we call yish in the world. You don't ever give up. There's no such thing as giving up in life. No matter what you're going through, no matter what you've been through, don't give up. Because things can change. Just talk to God. He's your Father. One of the biggest pieces of advice that somebody ever gave me in life is talk to God like you talk to your Father. Again, I'm not analyzing what you guys have relationships with your Father or not. But if you guys can go to your father and ask him, Dad, can I have $5? Oh, and then you guys don't ask for $5 anymore. Can I have it for 50? Right? If you could talk to your father, your father's like, yeah, right, what do you think, money grows on trees? I bet God doesn't do that. Okay?
ATM?
What?
Was one of my ATM?
Same one. Heard that one before also. Get a job. Right?
Yeah.
Okay? But seriously, you speak to God like you speak to your father. Because he listens. And he does answer. And that's what the Gemara is trying to tell you. This guy got out of bed. This guy got out of the deathbed. This guy got the hangman's noose off his neck. Because he davened and he understood the power of those tefillahs, that they could be answered. And this guy stayed in that bed, that even though he davened, and even though he had kavanah on the words, but he thought that he had given up all hope. And he had thought that there was nothing there left to be answered for. And therefore he wasn't answered. So guys, a few cherev shlufa al tzavara. Even if that drawn sword is on your neck, al tashayash min aracham. Good enough?
All right.
Stand up.
Listen, mine. Whoa, didn't stop yet.